Hello and welcome to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. This episode is a Full Cup Cafe episode coming from our midweek service. So settle back for this week's teaching.
Nicholas Winton is now 104 years old. In fact, he'll be 105 years old next month, tomorrow, May something. But in 1939, he was a very prosperous stockbroker in London. And he heard about the rumblings of Nazism and Hitler and his probable taking over and coming into Czechoslovakia. And the Jewish problem in Czechoslovakia and the problems of possibly Jewish children being at risk. And so he took his 2-week vacation and went to Prague to see if there was anything he could do to help Jewish children get out of Czechoslovakia. He didn't know how in the world he could do it because he was not dealing at that time with the Nazis so much as he was dealing with bureaucracy, British and, of course, Czechoslovakian. So he got in there and just did what he could. And are you cold, Ted? Is anybody else cold? Ted's covering his ears, Elmer. I don't know what that means, but you might do something accordingly. He did what he could, and he went back to Britain, and he found a piece of stationery of some kind of children's charity, and he fraudulently just put his name on that stationery as the chairman of a children's division of this particular charity. Now, he wasn't a chairman, and he didn't have anything to do with that charity. He was just fraudulently doing this, not for his own benefit, but just trying to wade through bureaucracy to somehow get these children out of Czechoslovakia. Well, it's a long story, and by the way, you can go online right now to the 60 Minutes webpage and get this full story. It's still on there, and it's a fascinating story. But he successfully got, before the declaration of war, before the Nazis moved in, 669 children safely out of Czechoslovakia, Jewish children, on a train into Britain safely. He tried to get some more into America. Some low-level diplomat in the American embassy said, no, America can't take them. They could have saved a lot more Jewish children. A very poignant part of that piece was Jewish parents packing up their children, knowing they would never see them again, putting them on trains. And of course, the parents would be killed in Auschwitz and many other places. But this man, Nicholas Winton, successfully saved 669 Jewish children. It's a story he never told. He wasn't trying to keep it secret, but the BBC called and found out about the story and produced a documentary about it and called together the adult children together for a special program and called Nicholas Winton in, as of course he's like I say, 104 years old at that time. And into a special program. He didn't know what the deal was, but he was on the front row, and they had all the people in the auditorium stand who had been saved by Nicholas Winton. And of course, everybody in the auditorium stood, and they had him stand and look around and see. And of course, it was a very emotional thing. And he was just bowled over with emotion, as you can imagine. But did he save just 669 children? No, because in the decades since, they had themselves children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and they pointed out that Nicholas Winton, on a two-week vacation, saved 15,000 children. 669 became 15,000. Now, why do I bring that up in this era of talking about engagement, telling the story, the art of neighboring, walking across the room, all of these things that I know probably by now you're sick of hearing? It seems so overwhelming to think about engaging your neighbor. I mean, what are the possibilities in any way of changing the world through engaging one person with the story of Christ or the story of the Bible? Well, of course, you're not going to change the world. You will change somebody's world, possibly. And that person could change another person's world. And when you multiply that out, you may save a lot of people's world. And that made me think of something I had seen a long time ago. You know, one of the things that had always sort of amazed me in the grand scheme of things is, why didn't Jesus come? Why didn't he wait to come until, say, 2014, when we had satellites and the internet, and he could stay in one place and talk to the world? Why didn't he wait? Why did he come in 30 A.D. when they were still riding on camels and all of that? Why did Paul come and do his missionary journeys when they were still riding on ships and didn't have cell phones and all of that? Why were they still doing those kinds of things when they could have waited and come at a time of instant communication? Didn't God know what was, you know, around the corner, so to speak, in their big vision that only God could have? Well, what I asked Joanne to put on the board was this geometric progression of a multiplying ministry. The same principle applies today as it did in 30 AD. If one person teaches one person and that person is faithful on about teaching another person, whether it's now or whether it's then or whether it's 10,000 years from now. Of course, this is all theoretical and we know this is not going to happen. And the Lord knows it's not going to happen. The Lord knows that people are going to be lost. But theoretically, this is how the gospel will go around the world. And it's, by the way, the world population right now is 7.1 billion people. 7.1 billion people. With this principle of multiplying ministry, if four disciples faithfully taught other people, in 17 years, it would just take 17 years for there to be 17 billion other disciples, far outnumbering the population of the world. It would only take a little over 11 years, 12 years, to reach the population of the world. Jesus knew what he was doing. God knew what he was doing if we would be faithful. The point is, we don't need to be overwhelmed to teach one other person, two other people, and bring them along to discipleship, and they be faithful in teaching one or two other people. That's how it's done. If we would just be faithful. And God knew that. Well, Nicholas Winton did his little bit, and the results were staggering. But I do recommend, go to 60minutes.com, watch that little piece. He's still living, 105 almost years old, and you'll be electrified by this little man who did his thing in 1939 that made a difference for a lot of people. Well, tonight we're going to travel Route 66, and for a preacher, this is steak and potatoes. And always a preacher wants to give you lasagna or something exotic. And we always strive to go to the backside of Habakkuk to pick a passage that sort of excites you, especially those of you who've been around for a long time and you've heard things for a long time. And what I'm giving you is nothing new, except maybe for people who've not heard it before, and there may be a few of those of you here, but I want to just give you a sample of what's online for you to download at any point that you want to. The least intimidating way for you to maybe have a conversation with someone who has that might lead to a deeper conversation about the Lord is just a study of the Bible. They don't know much about the Bible, and you have time to share it with them. And so you might want to offer this study, Traveling Route 66. And the introduction to Traveling Route 66, and this is not on the screen yet, Joanne, but I just introduce it this way. Welcome to the Mother Road. How many of you remember Route 66? Well, a few of you do. I was reading on Facebook the other day something about the kids who are graduating high school right now, and it just makes you sick of what they don't know, what they've never heard of, and so I suspect they've never heard of Route 66. There's a lot of other things they've never heard of. They've never had the chance to know of them. It's not their fault. I'm not blaming them. It's just the movement of time. This first session of Traveling Route 66, I say, welcome to the Mother Road. That's the nickname of Route 66. This was the name given a famous and historic highway that led many Americans to wonderful new opportunities out west. Even today, people of all ages and from all over the world retrace the path of this grand old highway as it boldly pushed toward the horizon through rich farmland and high plains, through deserts and over mountain passes. And that's true. Many Europeans come to this country and they want to retrace the old highway Route 66. The highway stopped only at the magnificent Pacific Ocean, where wonder again directed eyes and hearts to what lay even farther beyond. Route 66 represented the path to a better place, because within the hearts of human beings of all times and places, there is that longing for fulfillment and abundance. There is that spark of divinity within us that points our eyes beyond to the better place. Well, this study will take us down another Route 66, a mighty highway that has led human beings to the better place for centuries. It recounts the experiences of real men and women as they have pushed for the horizon through fertile lands and desert, through the mountain passes of life, and across raging rivers. And it has brought us all to the place where we look most longingly and wonder. At the bedside of loved ones or in our own quiet moments, we think, what lies beyond. Where is that ultimate better place? Well, you realize by now that we are no longer speaking of a literal highway. We are talking about the Bible. Though many books have come later making claims of being special, there is no book like the Bible. It has endured the test of time and the malicious attacks of those who have tried to destroy it. However, with every serious encounter, our own inner voice confirms that this book, our collection of books, is real, genuine, authentic, and unique. I've said many times before, you can't read the Bible without believing in your heart. You just can't make this up. I mean, this is real. This is real stuff. If I were writing the Bible, I wouldn't write it like this. This is real, authentic, genuine stuff. It speaks honestly of the lives of great people of the past, their failures and victories. It speaks truthfully of the costs of believing, of really following Jesus. It doesn't play games or make phony claims. It is what it is. It is what it is for us to accept or reject. I'm sorry, it is what it is for us to accept or reject. This study is called Traveling Route 66, first because there are 66 books in the Bible. There are 39 books in the Old Testament and 27 books in the New Testament for a grand total of 66. Furthermore, when you study the Bible, you will be traveling. It is a trip from a point where you presently are to a better place. Don't study the Bible if you don't want to think. You can change. The Bible is about movement. It goes somewhere and it will take you. The Bible has a beginning point and it travels to a vista where you actually glimpse what lies beyond. You are in for a real and lifelong adventure if you decide to take the trip. If you are ready, let's go together. And so from there we go into session one, but I'm going to skip over to session two. And so here's where we start on the screen up here. And by the way, again, after each session, I always ask the question, now, is this good for you? Do you want to continue this? And if they say, no, this is boring, I say, well, let's go to the Dairy Queen then. How about that? We'll get us a Coke. Okay, session two. We'll pack for the trip. We did that in session one, so this is more packing for the trip. You have chosen to take this wonderful trip on the Mother Road. Here is another bit of basic understanding that you will need to make the trip. Life is about choices and is the accumulation of daily choices. This is one thing I want to really hone in on as we make this study together. I want that person to realize that life is choices. Life is not something that happens to them. Life is something that they have chosen, and likely they are reaping the benefits of choices they have made. Life is about choices and is the accumulation of daily choices. Everything we know and experience begins with a choice. The Bible is about crucial choices made by God, even, and mankind. Number one, God chose one planet. They'll write that down in that blank. Out of millions to make beautiful and suitable for His chosen special creation, human beings. Have you thought about that? Out of all of this universe and galaxies, one planet that we know of, and we've been here a long time. And I even think there's one other planet out there way off in the distance that may be inhabitable or suitable for habitation, but as far as we know, there's nobody living on it. God chose one planet out of millions to make beautiful and suitable for His chosen special creation. He chose humans over all other created beings, and there's a lot of created beings, to be His special children. Like all parents, He wanted children to love and upon whom to shower gifts. There's not a parent in here who doesn't love his child and wants to do good things for their children. Well, that's the way God is. See, we're made in the image of God. He wanted children just like we want children. God is described as a God of love. But you see, love must have an object or it's not love. He chose a wonderful environment on the earth in which to place his children, the first humans. A garden that fulfilled man's and woman's complete needs. They were to live worry-free lives within the protection of that garden. God chose to give his special creation, human beings, the same power to choose as he possessed. Very important point here. If God was free to choose, he did not restrict choice on our part. He loved us enough to give us the power to choose. He dignified us to give us the power to choose. Love can't be commanded, nor loving action forced. Humans were created totally free to choose. Total freedom means enjoying the results of good choices, but also suffering the consequences of awful choices. Life would be all about choices. Human beings, from the beginning of their existence, demonstrated the tendency to choose the road of self-will, going their own way instead of God's. Adam and Eve made a crucial choice in the garden. The word sin means, you need to have them write that down in their blank, rebellion, or to disobey the law of God. This is also important. It is not error or mistake, not stumbling or falling accidentally. You see, how many people, especially celebrities, you'll see this on TV a lot, when they come to confession time, they'll say, I made a mistake. Okay, we're all human. I made a mistake. No, you didn't make a mistake. Say it. Say it. You sinned. What does that mean? You rebelled against the law of God. You knew what you were doing. You knew what God wanted. And you refused to do it. That's what sin is. You didn't stumble. You sinned. Okay, that's an important foundation to lay. It's premeditated disobedience to the will of God. It's a choice that is consciously made. The result of humankind's choice was and continues to be, write it down, disaster. We see evidence all around and the human suffering that inevitably results. You see it everywhere. You see it in homes that are supposed to be Christian. You see it in homes that are not Christian. You see it in our city. You see it in our nation. You see it in ghettos. You see it in mansions. You see it everywhere. Disaster, chaos. Well, I add things like this every once in a while just for discussion. Thinking out loud, what are some of the disastrous results you see today when human beings choose their way over God's way? Just take time to think about that and talk about it. Have them talk about it. It's important. What are some of the things? What do you think CPS sees? What do you think Patsy's house sees? What do policemen see as they make their patrols at night? What do they see? What do homicide detectives see right here in Wichita Falls while we're home safely in bed? In response to human rebellion, God had to make another choice. What were his options? What would you do if you were God? Abandon the dream of children? Do you know the pain of giving up on a dream? abandon these first humans? Imagine life without God and His benefits. Could a God of love turn His back on His most treasured creation? Ignore the rebellion and allow humans to flaunt their disobedience? Picture the result when children in a home were allowed to disobey without consequence. Have you ever seen that, by the way, in a home where the parents give up being parents and let the children rule the home? And little kids, you know, are the boss. Teachers have. Disregard for law leads to chaos and violence. Civilization cannot exist when the inmates run the asylum. Laws are meant to protect. For laws to be effective, there must be consequences for disobedience or punishment. In addition, discipline is an indication of love. The opposite of love is not hate, but indifference. Parents you see at Walmart who don't do anything to control their kids, they're not showing love. They're showing they don't care. And that kid knows it. My parents don't care for me. And boy, when they're teenagers and old enough to do something about it, boy, they'll act out that realization their parents don't care for them. And their picture will be on Channel 6 News. Most wanted. Laws are meant to protect. For laws to be effective, there must be consequences for disobedience or punishment. In addition, discipline is an indication of love. The opposite of love is not hate but indifference. Sorry, I read that before. Meet the demands of the law while demonstrating unbelievable love. But how could that be done? God's choice was to take upon Himself the punishment that humans deserved. He chose to come Himself and personally show humans how to live. To do this, He would have to share the human experience completely from birth to death. God chose to offer Himself through Christ. Christ is described in human terms as God's only Son. It was a sacrifice beyond comprehension. God chose the world's most ambitious and courageous plan to save His precious human beings. It would require centuries to fully implement with all its complexities. But at precisely the right time, God would undertake this boldest of all missions to rescue His most precious creation and assume His rightful place as King in their lives. To implement His great plan, God would make other major choices that impact our world profoundly even today. God chose a person of great faith and his descendants through whom to work the plan. The man's name was Abraham. His descendants were the Hebrews. And here's where I choose to make some definitions. Hebrew refers to race. Jew refers to religion. Israel refers to the nation. The terms are often used interchangeably. However, there are technical differences. Don't forget to pack this on our trip. Now, God did not love other races or people less. His purpose is to bless and save the entire human race. The Hebrews would serve as God's chosen people, not because of superiority in any way. However, the Hebrews would serve as God's chosen for these reasons, and I list a few, to demonstrate the wisdom of God's laws and the blessings of obedience, to demonstrate the terrible consequences of rebelling against God's laws, and the Hebrews did that many times, to demonstrate the standards of holiness to which God would call all of His children. God calls human beings to come out and be separate, the meaning of holiness. And you read the Leviticus and Numbers and Exodus, and you see what holiness means. To demonstrate concepts that would serve as the basis for a new kingdom, the kingdom of Christ on the earth. To demonstrate God's love and grace and to be the human line for Christ. Another choice God made was to communicate with humans. While some people imagine God or gods as being far removed and detached, the God of the Bible speaks to humans and interacts with them. Okay, Joanne, go on. I think that may be all. Okay, I talk about a, a, a road map, and I just kind of include here. I won't go over that, but that's just kind of a summary of the entire Bible, beginning with beginnings, Genesis, and Job, probably one of the earliest books of the Bible, and this just going down as a summary. And here's another brief overview, beginning with beginnings here, and going on up to the end of the Bible. And in this section, that's a brief look at the roadmap. Now, are you ready to get behind the wheel? When can we get back together again? At that point, if they say, I'm not interested, we'll go back to the Dairy Queen. Okay, session four. How much time do we have? We're about out of time. Skip to session four, which is, I'll spend a brief time in the Old Testament. I want to get to the New Testament because really the purpose of this Bible study is to get quickly to the relevance of Christianity and get them thinking about being a Christian and get the discussion started about their responsibilities. And are you ready to see some of the most beautiful scenery on Route 66? Let's look at the New Testament, turn to the table of contents, and find the book of Matthew. Here's one thing I do in this study. They have their Bible before them, and I want them to actually take their Bible and with their fingers, their thumb and their forefinger, actually hold the section I'm dealing with. So that's what this means. Everything to the left of... is this where I do that? Turn to the table of contents and find the book of Matthew. Everything to the left of that page. No, this is not it. Everything to the left of that page, the biggest part is history in one form or another. It's the Old Testament. The Old Testament interfaces with all the parts of the Bible. There's a thread or a theme that runs throughout the entire Bible. Directly and indirectly, Jesus Christ and his saving of all mankind is the focus of the entire Bible. The main section of your Bible that tells us about Jesus Christ and his new kingdom is the section that is titled the New Testament. Here, okay, step one. Beginning with Matthew, where you will leave a finger, turn the pages until you get to the Acts of the Apostles, and then we get on into the New Testament. Okay, we'll stop there because you get an idea of the nature of the traveling Route 66, just a general overview of the Bible. Standard stuff for most of you, but again, to a good many of the population of our city, of most everyone you meet, unchurched people, this is Greek to them. They've never looked at the Bible, and this would be a good way for you to establish a relationship with them, because a lot of folks would like to have some understanding of the Bible, believe me, and this would be an entrance for you with them. Well, thank you kindly. And remember, Nicholas Winton and 60 Minutes. Go check it out. You'd love the story.